Welcome to the Scrum.org Community Podcast, a podcast from the home of Scrum. In this podcast, we feature professional Scrum trainers and other Scrum practitioners sharing their stories and experiences to help learn from the experience of others. This episode is a previous recording of our live Ask a Professional Scrum Trainer series, where a live audience asks questions of professional Scrum trainers. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're located today. Welcome to today's Ask a Professional Scrum Trainer. I'm Lindsay Velasina with Scrum.org, and I will be your moderator today. And we are very fortunate to have two professional Scrum Trainers with us today. We have Pavel Kalkis and Mihai Olaru. So welcome to you both, and thank you so much for taking the time today to answer our listeners' questions. And let's get started. So just very quickly about Scrum.org, we are the home of Scrum. We were founded by Ken Schwaber back in 2009. Our mission is to help people and teams solve complex problems, and we do so through our professional Scrum training. We have over 350 professional Scrum trainers globally. We also offer professional Scrum certification, as well as lots of ongoing learning opportunities. Learning does not stop. Once you leave the classroom, we are very big on encouraging you to continue your learning. There are a lot of free ways to do so on the Scrum.org website and with webinars like this one. And we hope that today's session plays an important part in that. So with that, I will hand it over to our speakers to introduce themselves.
Hello, guys. Nice to meet you. Pavel Kalkus, a Polish PST. I work mostly on the Polish market. I run trainings all over the world, especially now in the remote setting. I am an Agile coach, Agile consultant, mostly specialized in media, banking, worked a little bit in logistics as well. I started as a project manager, so I have a fairly good understanding of the difficulties connected with the transitioning process. At the moment, focusing on the training aspect of Scrum, really enjoy teaching people about it, love it. At the same time, I run my own training company, and I'm just happy to be here with you today, answering the questions.
We're happy to have you. Okay, Mihai?
Hello, good morning, right? Good afternoon, good evening. This is Mihai Olaru speaking. I'm a PST since 2021, I think December, 2 years ago or so. I've been starting as software and telecom engineer about 20 years ago. And I worked with different companies developing mainly digital products. Been leading teams and starting using Agile since 2006 approximately, and having accountabilities as a Scrum Master, product owner, and then an Agile coach. I am teaching and coaching people and teams towards a better use of agility. In Romania, we have a business established called PM Access, to which we provide our service. And I'm very happy to have you all here for this session. Thank you.
Awesome. All right. So now is the time that we are going to invite you to enter your questions into the Q&A. I'm going to stop sharing so I can see the questions. Let's see. This is pretty big question. So this question comes from Anders. In our organization, management wants to adopt the Agile approach using Scrum. I am the first certified Scrum Master, even though we have 8,500 employees. However, top-level management still wants the classic Gantt chart depicting all major milestones in the years to come. How have you been working with this in other organizations? I assume it's a common challenge. Mihai, do you want to start with this one?
Yeah. So, Anders, thank you for the question. There are environments which actually tackle company-wide organizational change, like the one you are talking about, all the time. So this is a very distressful time for organization trying to right to change the way they are doing business or the way they are operating or trying to provide value to their customers. And the Scrum Master as an accountability is actually to be responsible for teaching agility and helping organizations go this way or using empiricism throughout their entire value chain, right? Not just working with teams. So it's a common problem or idea that Scrum Masters should look into how organizations get better at this. There is, however, little information in your question to get you started somewhere. But I would try in this situation to talk to maybe your business stakeholders who took the decision on this and try to find out more about the reasons. Why they're looking at this transformation and trying to help them by learning together with them what the benefits are and which steps to take. Pavel, you want to take on this as well?
Yeah, if I may add something, I agree with Mihai. That's a big one in terms of the scope of the question. My experiences, because I've been in places like that, show that. I don't want to simplify it absolutely, but it all boils down to the management's understanding of the domain in which we operate. So if as a Scrum Master, you can have a conversation with the management about the fact that, what type of problem are we really dealing with? If it's a complex problem with a lot of unpredictability, a lot of uncertainties, a lot of risks, it will be an easier argument to support the introduction of Scrum. Scrum is an empirical process that helps you deal with all of those unpredictable, uncertain circumstances. And it might make sense for them. At the same time, you could also try and figure out if in the past that detailed Gantt chart planning have worked, because that might also be a source of arguments to support the hypothesis that having a more iterative incremental approach, being able to adapt the plan on a multiple, on a regular basis would make more sense from their perspective. So just to be like more very specific, I would potentially start with this direction.
Great, thank you. I hope this helps, Anders. And if you have any follow-up questions, feel free to add them. Okay, so next question. This is an anonymous question. Is an agile coach the same as a Scrum Master? Pavel, do you want to take this one?
Sorry, guys, my connection is a little unstable. So if Mihai, you
Okay,
could take this one.
I could take this. Okay,
Yeah, sorry for
so
that.
Scrum accountabilities, right? What we know when we look in the Scrum guide, only cover three accountabilities, right? We're only talking about product owners, Scrum Masters, and developers. And there is a reason, right? We also have a lot of, let's say, dependencies to the outside of the team, the organization in large, right? So that doesn't mean necessarily that there isn't such organizational role as an agile coach. But from Scrum perspective, what a Scrum Master does is not only accounts for the accountability, internal accountability of team effectiveness, but also usually helps the whole group working with the team, like other teams, stakeholders, business relate to what the team is building and help them learn empiricism and use it to get to their final valuable results. So to me, I would say the Scrum Master is actually helping the organization throughout without this interfering with any other external role or organizational structure that the company may have decided to use. Typically, when even I help organizations do this, I work as a Scrum Master, trying to improve that agile way of working.
If I can add something to this one, as Mihai stated, you know, the Scrum framework does not outline a role like that. Although the industry does, and so you will most likely come across an agile coach, agile consultant, figures like that. Ultimately, it comes down to the question of what that person is accountable for. When it comes to Scrum introduction, we have a clear picture that it's the Scrum Master's job to introduce the Scrum as defined in the Scrum Guide. And when you dive deeper into the accountability of a Scrum Master, it's much more than working with a team, as Mihai stated. So in essence, just to make the answer very short, oftentimes I found out that the way that the company interprets an Agile coach is essentially very similar to how we should understand the role of a Scrum Master. So a Scrum Master is essentially an Agile coach. Having said that, the market has its own approach to this, and oftentimes the Agile coach is perceived as some other, maybe higher role in the organization. It's not available in the Scrum Guide. Scrum Guide states that it's the Scrum Master's job to take care of the entire organizational design, essentially.
Great, thank you. Right. So the next question here. Thanks for the opportunity. You're welcome. I am a Scrum Master for multiple teams, and one of the teams has front end and back end team members. We can't work on the sprint goal effectively. How should we approach the situation to perform more efficiently in the long run?
That's an interesting question. Thank you for that. And it's also a common doubt that I encounter when working in organizations or running trainings. And I think it requires a little bit more research. We would need to figure out what those teams are working on at the moment, and also what the definition of the product is. Because if you start with a good definition of the product, you'll find out that the Scrum team should be able to deliver a valuable, useful piece of functionality at the end of the sprint that's valuable from the perspective of the stakeholders, of the customers. And so we should find a way, and I know I realize that might be difficult, but we should find a way to complement each other, to collaborate, to deliver something valuable as a combination of the front end and back end work within a sprint. Initially, that might be difficult. My experiences show that it also requires some amount of coaching, sharing experiences from other companies potentially when you work with a team like that. But ultimately, focusing on that value delivered by the end of the sprint from the perspective of a customer should help the team come up with a definition of work that would make it possible.
That's so great. Thank you.
And again, if
there's
I am
something
to
add, go ahead.
If I am to add something, I think this is a situation where maybe we can call this a feature team, right? With people actually being capable of building rather more valuable outcome on their own without having too many dependencies outside the team. So you can also look at this as an opportunity. Scrum also allows using component teams as well, like people building, I don't know, front end and back end separately, maybe in different teams, but that would require those dependencies between the teams be resolved during the sprint. So that at the end of the sprint, each team can contribute to a single increment, right? So my advice is also look at this from the positive aspect. Are we having less dependencies if you do that by having all the skills inside a single team, and how you can actually benefit from it?
And Pranav, the person who asked the question, actually elaborated a little bit and said that my approach is to start with smaller user stories so the team can become full stack.
That's definitely, and just adding a tiny little bit to what Mihai said, I would also say that from a measurement point of view, a way to convince others to this type of work is to look at the cycle time, for example. How long does it take you to deliver a full feature at the end? And if it takes multiple sprints because of the dependencies of how the or how the teams are structured, that could be an argument supporting collaboration, more intensive integration throughout the sprint.
Great, thank you. Anything else to add on that one, or should we move on?
Moving on.
Okay. Just a little announcement for people here that are live on the Zoom. If you could please add your questions to the Q&A box and not in the chat, that would be really helpful because that's how the questions are captured. Seems like a lot of people are just putting them in the chat. If you could please move those questions over to the Q&A, that would be great. All right, so what is the role of a scrum master in convincing a business owner who is not convinced with a product produced during a sprint review? So what should a scrum master do?
So very, very good question. So we're looking at value. Everything that Scrum promotes is actually a way to get more often to good value being released and used eventually by the people who paid for it or by the end users, people who actually consume, right, the product that the team produces. And I would talk to the business owner or whoever assesses the result of the team's work at the end of this sprint. That business owner wouldn't, yeah, if they're not pleased or convinced about the product, what is really the value to them? Maybe there is more to get from a conversation with a such stakeholder. So I don't think it's the Scrum Master role, though, to prioritize or get into maybe decisions. We have a different accountability for that in the team, but working with the product owner, which actually has this accountability, and that stakeholder would get them probably more, let's say, synchronized, right, on what value is expected from the team.
Mm-hmm. Two words here. I totally agree with Mihai. So starting from the value, how value is being perceived and defined, that would be a good option here. Just a short side topic, you could look into EBM, evidence-based management, as a way to define, measure value and how we progress towards delivering value. Ultimately, it's the discussion that the product owner should have with the business stakeholders. Definitely Scrum Master's help could be valuable here. Facilitating that process could help. But at the end of the day, we have to remember that Scrum is a lot about discovery. And so I would try to find out, why is that business stakeholder unhappy? Maybe there were some experiments that failed. And we have to remember that failure is, you know, we have to treat failure with a healthy approach, meaning failure is an opportunity to learn something. And again, it all comes down to the fact whether we had a discussion about how to deal with complex problems, and that Scrum is a tool to deal with those. And sometimes we, you know, we try different things, they might not work. But we need to constantly reevaluate whether we are heading in the right direction. And EBM could be a good suggestion here.
Can you elaborate a little bit more on evidence-based management?
Mm-hmm. Evidence-based management, it's a framework that Scrum.org created a while ago. It offers us a number of perspectives on how you can perceive the market value of a product and also the organizational capabilities to deliver that value. So it introduces four value areas, we call them that way. We look at the current value that the product is delivering. We looked at the market potential that we have, that's called unrealized value. We look at the time to market, which is essentially a tool to help us figure out how fast are we delivering value to the market, and then also our ability to innovate, to generate new valuable elements of the product. It requires, it's a full day training, but it is a useful tool for product owners and for Scrum Masters to help the organization understand that ultimately, when we enter the world of product delivery and dealing with complex problems, we have to try out different things and then measure the results. And that's the way to measure those results.
Thank you. And I did drop a link to a page with information about EBM, and a link to the guide is in there as well. Feel free to check that out after the session. All right, so let's move on to the next question. So I have a question about prioritization in the backlog regarding risk and value. So the question is high risk and high value or low risk and high value?
Nice question. Can I take it?
Yeah, maybe? Sure. Go for it.
So I think it's always good to ask ourselves, why do we want the things to go right faster or to have things done prioritized or ordered in a, I don't know, a certain way. And yeah, of course, we touched on value. It's obvious that higher value items would be something of an attraction, right? And something you want to get in front. But also, even before getting to the risk question, value alone could not tell you everything that you want, right? From a prioritization or ordering perspective. Think about the effort put into creating one item that's high value, right? So it's high value, but how long would the team work on it trying to build it, right? So maybe it's two items, the A and B, that have the same amount of value attributed to them, right? And there could be some other metric or some other criteria to pick from two similarly valuable items. So I call this maybe effort, but it could be called cost or whatever the company is spending on, right? Building that feature. So in our cases, it's somehow related to the forecast that the team presents based on how fast they can do it. So if one of the items could be, I don't know, done in 2 weeks and another one could be done in 2 days, well, they having the same value, you would also pick thinking of which one is actually faster, right? So maybe high value and low cost, that could be one answer. And risk-wise, I think it's also high risk, right? Because if it's high risk, it's finding out something about a highly risky situation. You even treat that risk like, I don't know, decrease its probability of happening or decrease its impact by doing something about it. Or you could actually eliminate the risk altogether by doing something quickly, or even if you find out, well, this is still risky or still a big problem, at least you have more knowledge about it. So for me, it's a three. When I usually talk about this, is maybe high value, high risk, and low cost. Those are the criteria I would pick for higher priority or higher order.
I would just add that from the product owner's perspective, you know, accountability person being accountable for ordering the product backlog, you will take multiple things into account when building that order. Value, risk, effort, just as Mihai stated, sometimes development cohesion, for example. I think the key thing here is that the context matters. Sometimes the decision might lead you towards going into the low risk thing because of the fact that you need to get to the market with something sooner and you don't want to take the risk. From my perspective, taking on, as we say, I think there's a saying like that, swallowing a frog or something like that, at least in Poland, sometimes you might want to take the high risk option because you want to identify as quickly as possible what's behind a particular product backlog item, how can we mitigate that risk, and so you will take that step. Ultimately, it comes down to building transparency around the choices that we make. What are the potential consequences? That's a conversation that the product owner would have with stakeholders, building that understanding.
Awesome. Thank you. All right. So moving along. So this next question, these questions are great. They're all across the map. If an organization is not practicing Scrum as a whole from end to end, then it is not Scrum. How can very large organizations who are so grounded in the traditional approach to project management and recently built capacity of Agile with some of its staff transform to Scrum entirely without dropping the components and rules of Scrum?
I can take this one. Well, first of all, I think my approach is that when you have a big organization, and I worked in some large corporate environments, introducing Scrum in a full throttle manner might be impossible. That doesn't necessarily mean that we'll not be using Scrum. So my experiences show that oftentimes a good way to start is to create something that sometimes we call it Scrum Studio, which is just a dedicated environment, maybe around one product, like a little bubble inside of which Scrum happens as it's meant to be. And then with the flow of time, when people around it, stakeholders, will notice that this operational model works and it brings a lot of value in terms of the quality of the product, the customer satisfaction, but also the predictability that we get out of that. When you compare it to a using, like a long-term planning model, predictive approach, when that happens, then most likely we will get a green light to enlarge the bubble and in introduce other products into the entire picture. And I've used that approach when I worked in the banking industry, a global bank in locally here in Poland, and we used that approach at the and that was a number of years ago. I left the company since then, but I came back with some training opportunities, and I can see that the transformation process essentially went through the roof. They're huge right now, and then Scrum has been adopted in multiple other places within the organization. So start small and then build on top of that based on the results, because this is how you build trust with the management who makes the decision to roll out Scrum to other areas.
I love that. That's really great advice with building the trust and starting small, for sure. All right, so next question here. So as developers, often when breaking down user stories into tasks, we get asked, how long will this take? How do we translate an estimate of effort, story points in parentheses, to an estimate of time? Go ahead, Mihai.
So typically this is a situation that most of the teams who actually try to use a different approach to time estimation have. Like, of course, some teams still can use single point estimations or approach their I don't know, assumptions of how things would take using time, and that is still a possibility, though we've learned while working with our teams that are some things are not very stable related to those time estimations. So in time, more options or opportunities of answering this type of questions emerge. So historically, you probably know about the relative sizing, right? And things like t-shirt sizes or story points. And those were for some time useful. But many people wonder, well, are these actually translatable to time? And the answer is no. They actually relate to work complexity. And I even advise, when I have this type of discussion, I even advise against turning it to any kind of or sort of rule of mapping story points to time, because those would make the actual relative sizing effort unuseful, right? And with time, even better approaches emerged. And the latest trend, and what we see from most of the teams, and the one providing more benefits to answer this better, are derivating or coming from the flow metrics used mostly by Kanban team, but also by Scrum teams who manage their workflow with Kanban metrics. And using Kanban metrics like cycle time, how much time does it take from entering the process flow up until something gets delivered? Or throughput, how many work items are we being able to pass through our working flow and delivering per unit of time, like for example, per sprint? Or work item age, so how many days this item has been in our work process. WIP, how many work items are in process right now? So using those flow metrics, right, from Kanban, actually help forecasting even dates or answering questions like when it will be done better, because they involve a rather statistical approach rather than just some numbers run on past work. And how this work, maybe you want to take a deeper look into it. People using this type of metrics, flow metrics, rely on Monte Carlo simulations, like statistical simulation based on work history with those work item metrics I just explained. And based on those, they actually simulate, like throwing a dice for everything that could happen in the future, so many times, like 10,000, 20,000, 100,000 times, simulating situations or possible situation based on the actual team history and generating answers like, well, with the probability of about 80%, you could be finishing this work by then. If you want a higher probability, that analysis that Monte Carlo simulation can give you a probability for, I don't know, a 90% chance. Or if you're less more flexible about it, maybe you want some lower level of probability, you can look at it again. And what happens when stakeholders who ask that type of question, when they see the data and they understand it based on actual team history work, and it's based on also statistics, data, and math, right? Things are generating using your own data and relying on statistics. They generally tend to be more trusting in those information. And what I learned from one of our colleague PSTs is, well, how do they know okay, things are going the right way? Because even 85 or 90% probability doesn't mean, obviously, this is not predicting, it's just forecasting still. So a way to answer this is maybe if you want even a better forecast, join us for the end of the next sprint, right? When we have some more work done. And so this way we have more data to run our analysis against, and you will be able to give you even a better forecast.
That's great, thank you. Right, we hope that helps. Right, this question here: what is the relationship between the product owner and Scrum Master on a Scrum team? In other words, how does a Scrum Master help a product owner, and vice versa? Pavel, do you want to take this one?
It's a loving relationship, you know, full of trust and respect. No, but in all seriousness, the two should work really hand in hand. From a Scrum Master perspective, we have to remember that ultimately our accountability is to make sure that the team is as effective as possible, and that will mean that we will serve the team, serve the product owner, look for different opportunities to remove impediments and make the environment around the team easier. From a perspective of collaboration with the product owner, what some of the things that you could be expected, the product owner could expect from you, is, for example, being a source of knowledge in regards to the different techniques and practices when it comes to defining the product goal, product vision, facilitating product discovery workshops, helping out with the with defining product backlog items. This is one of the ways you could interact with the product owner. The other way is to make sure that the product owner understands that he is essentially one of the key elements in the whole empirical process, because he is the one accountable for value maximization. And so just making sure he understands that concept of continuously reevaluating the direction through delivering done increments, obtaining feedback, interacting with stakeholders, this is also a key thing here. And the Scrum Master will often have to sort of remind the product owner of how the whole model works. I would also say that from a Scrum Master perspective, it's also important to look at the surrounding of the product owner, look at the different people that interact with him, how they interact, whether there is some pressure being applied. Oftentimes, the Scrum Master has to engage. If there's, I've been in situations like that where there was some aggressive directive behavior towards the product owner, when some of the stakeholders questioned the authority of the product owner, this is when a Scrum Master needs to engage, because ultimately something is, something wrong is happening to the Scrum configuration here. So you need to engage and then help the product owner out. Mihai, would you want to add anything here?
Yeah, actually, I do, and I remember situations when this happens. Sometimes product owners are not necessarily familiar with building products empirically or using I don't know, agile approaches, right? Or what Scrum is, or how the role of the product owner influences the success of the team. And actually, in the Scrum guide, you can find some items or accountabilities, right, relating to what the Scrum Master would need to do to help the product owners get better at this, right? So, for example, talking to them about empiricism and how a product is being built incrementally, right, and iteratively, and how does that help? Would be a good thing to have them always in an open discussion. Also, Scrum Master could be of much help, as Pavel suggested, while product owner is interacting with different sets of stakeholders, coming let's say with some facilitation techniques or things that they could add from communication perspective. But there's another way, really, in which a Scrum Master serves the product owner as well, by talking to the team about how important it is to have very short, sometimes, and concise product backlog items. Sometimes, from my experience at least, sometimes the team require, like, hey, we need to have everything prepared and have all the details up front. Like, I don't know, when we did one-year cycle software product development in Waterfall, right? So the Scrum Master needs to work with the team to make them understand the importance of concise and limited information in a rapidly changing environment and an empirical environment. So there are many ways in which they can collaborate. And
The recent, the most recent example of a nice conversation I had when I was running an advanced class for a product owner was, I heard a lot of frustration when it comes to how disengaged the developers were in the product development process, just expecting, following to what you said, Mihai, just expecting the product owner to come up with everything, right? And we were talking about a large scaled environment, multiple teams, a single product owner. A lot of work for that product owner, because that person at the same time was a one of the senior directors. And so one of the ways that a Scrum Master can help is to help the team understand that they have a lot, they have a huge influence over what it is that they're, we will be introducing into the product. And being a set of specialists, the product owner would love to hear the input from them. That ultimately contributes to a better way to deal with complex problems, because you're essentially generating more ideas, and you're not only relying on one person's creativity. So maybe following down that path would also be a useful thing for a Scrum Master to do.
Awesome advice. Thank you. All right. So, do you think a Scrum Master is a full-time job, or the person who has the role can also be a technical specialist in the team? Dun dun dun.
I can take this one.
Okay, great.
That's an interesting question. Like, I'm among the PSTs that sort of joined the community and also started applying Scrum. I would say my career started in a little later than Mihai. Originally, the Scrum Master role was often coupled with the developer's role. Now, at the moment, like, my experiences show that, first of all, we need to make sure that we are providing value to the team. So we could elaborate on how the Scrum Master could provide value, but that might be a full-time job. especially if you're getting engaged on an organizational level as well. Remember, as a Scrum Master, you should work with a team, maybe with two teams, depending on their maturity level. That involves a lot of observation, data acquiring, so you need space for that. When you join the organization will also expect that you contribute towards other areas within the organization, take part in the community of practice, run training sessions, interact with stakeholders, build an understanding of how the empirical process works. That all requires time. I'm not saying it's, you know, it's impossible to sort of combine roles, but you have to remember that if you're a technical specialist, if you work as part of the developers group in the team, you might be inclined, you might feel the pressure to spend more time contributing to the product development, and that will take your time away from being a Scrum Master and acting as a Scrum Master. So there is some sort of a balance that you need to find out here. Mihai, anything you wanted to add to this one, or are we jumping to the next question?
Things are very, very common in experience that you see maybe developer in the team, helping with the team with the Scrum Master accountability as well. It happened to me in my teams where I worked for many times that happened. I don't think there is confusion about this or really something against this situation. It's just maybe when that person would have accountabilities or responsibilities for another team success during that sprint, reaching the sprint goal with both accountabilities as a developer and as a Scrum Master, I think maybe it would be a good idea to prioritize the Scrum Master, right? When he's both, because there are developers that through self-management would actually help finish the development work or whatever the developers have to complete. But from Scrum Master perspective, they should not forget their accountabilities from this perspective. So I don't see a problem for this mix, developer and Scrum Master. Sometimes depending on the size of the team, for example, the situation currently going in that team, I see quite an opportunity for that.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you both. That was good advice there. So this question here from an anonymous attendee, we're currently going through organizational changes. These changes determine that we will migrate to the product of another company that we're merging with instead of continuing to build the product that we've been working on for about a year and a half. As a product owner, what is the best way to shift that focus and convey this to developers without losing motivation, since they feel as though their work has been lost? So how do we motivate the team to move forward?
Tough one, right? So I feel, this is a subject that maybe every business situation like a merger or so could bring. And it somehow feels unnatural, right? Because two products generally working separately now have to merge, and some part of it need to be replaced with another. And motivation in these cases is dropping, right? So we have to look at ways to overcome it. From motivation perspective, what we know from the studies being run, and I know Daniel Pink's work as well, the Drive book, is that typically with environments that rely on knowledge work, right? So the work that we do regarding information and product development, so motivation is actually stimulated by a few factors that are more intrinsic motivators than, rewards and punishments, external ones. And one of the intrinsic factors for motivation in that theory is the purpose, right? There are others like autonomy and mastery, but regarding this question, I would like to highlight the importance of showing the purpose to the team. So while being engaged in developing a product made sense for a while, but if the business configuration or the business approach changed and the purpose like where do we want to get, or what's the highest value possible we can offer with this product, has now become a different aspect. It is very important to communicate that purpose very clear and open to the people in the team. Once they get behind that purpose, and if they have your trust as a product owner, there should be a reaction to actually support the initiative. Even if in this situation, I totally understand that there should be a massive effort, right, from your side, and maybe the organization and the Scrum Master as well, to work with them to improve, right, how they're feeling about it.
I agree with Mihai. A tough case. I've never been in a situation like that, to be honest with you. But something that pops into my head when I consider the different teams I worked with, the different products I worked with, I would also relate to the purpose, the sense of purpose. Maybe just being able to climb a level higher and looking at the whole thing from a higher perspective, going back to the why behind why we're, you know, what why we're doing what we're doing, essentially. There's someone on the other side with a specific need, a specific problem. And if we look at it from that perspective, you know, it might make sense to change the products or to change the technology or to do multiple other, to go into multiple other areas. I've heard a nice story that sort of illustrates that when a new product owner took over a set of teams working on a medical product, and the way to build that direction was instead of giving them some sort of a narrative, he played a short clip showcasing a child that struggled with some sort of medical condition. And then after playing that, he went back to the developers saying, you know, this is why we do what we do. We want to make life of people suffering with that condition easier. We want to make it possible for them to travel normally, to live a normal life. And maybe just looking for something inspiring, again, being building that sense of purpose, would be a way to cope with this one. But I also think, you know, we have to admit, in a situation like that, we have to admit that it is a difficult situation. Sometimes there's no need to hide the truth or pretend that that's, you know, nothing wrong happened. Sometimes it also comes down to the business. It might have been a better business decision from a financial point of view. So,
awesome, thank you. All right, moving along, we have time for a few more questions here. So, trying to get through as many as we can. So, do you have any advice on working with distributed teams, specifically as a Scrum Master based in one country and then the developers based in another? This person is looking for advice on handling cultural differences to achieve open communication and transparency while also creating an effective team. Kind of distributed team advice.
I think that's a pain we all get nowadays, right? After the pandemic, and studies show that even though individual production productiveness went up, the team collaboration suffered. Some of the experiences that I have, and those are pre-pandemic experiences with teams spread all over the world, was from a Scrum Master perspective, the person interested in the team bonding, having a good atmosphere within, understanding each other, is to build a supportive argumentation to talk with management so that the management spends some money into bringing the people together occasionally, once every while, because you could try and simulate that environment of connecting with the other person, having a conversation online. There are different tools, like we're heading that way with the different solutions being worked on in Facebook, for example. But ultimately, when you get a group of people together, and that's my experience from working in a global company, we brought the entire team for 1 week, which was a fairly big cost. We brought them together, and then we spent 5 days within that week working, just continuing working on whatever was part of the sprint backlog, but also having additional workshops, getting to know each other. And then after the day's worth of work, those of us who still had energy, we could go out for a nice meal or something like that. And I remember one thing stayed with me after this one. I remember that One of the people approached me afterwards, and that person said, "You know, after that week, I feel like I'm more confident. I will be more confident in the future." Mentioning that I'm not handling something, I cannot deal with something, I'm struggling with something because of the fact that I now feel more secure within the team. I can be more vulnerable with the team. This is trust, and the only way to build trust, which is the prerequisite for an effective team. The only way to do it is you have to gradually do it. Like you have to communicate with others, integrate with them closely, and just relying solely on a Slack written, you know, written communication via Slack or email, that will not do the work, unfortunately.
Yeah, so I totally agree with Pavel on this, on the importance of actually meeting the people you're working with remotely. So even if you cannot work together for a long time, just maybe doing a bit of work, a sprint together, or just, I don't know, plan a sprint at least, and get out after the event, get out a bit and know each other, even at a personal level, like who we are as people, other than I don't know, the professionals in work. And I remember when that happened for me, because I used to be working pretty early in the 2000s with some distributed agile teams that had offices here in Bucharest, but also in Santa Clara, in near San Francisco, right? And when we traveled there and got the feedback integrated directly from the people we were working in, and trying to explain what happened and how we see things and how the differences of approach were working, I think it's something like a click, right? So when we're actually interacting with people directly, and thereafter, after we came back, right? It's just a few weeks or sprint working together. But after that, we went back to our original place, right? And there were still, I don't know, discussions remotely, right? But since then, I think when, I don't know, when we had a call, right? It seemed like it's a person calling. Before that, it was a problem calling you, right? So now getting to know each other as people, right, and realizing they're actually people involved, and the will to actually try to help someone figure out something is an enormous help. So yeah, I totally agree with Kavel on this. Yeah, let's get together at least for limited time if we can.
That's great. Thank you. All right, we have time for maybe one or two more. I thought this question was interesting. How do you explain to someone what business value is?
That's a nice one. Do you want to take this one, Mihai?
Yeah, I think you already started, Pavel, right?
I have. Well, again, you know, how do you explain to someone what business value is? Ultimately, it comes down to the customer outcome and also the impact on the company's finances. I would say if it's not a private company, if it's a public company, we're looking at how our solutions contribute to the overall well-being of people using them, and you can measure that multiple ways. EBM that we mentioned is just an indication of a direction, but depending on the industry that you worked in, it will differ. I want to give you a very specific example. When I worked in the media industry for a very long time, we would build major websites for the biggest media outlets in the country. We would spend a lot of time analyzing how long would people interact with the after visiting our website, how many page views that they would make, how many of the visitors would leave the website immediately after they entered. That's called bounce rate. Those particular metrics are very specific to this line of business. When I worked in banking, we would look at an entirely different thing. When I worked in e-commerce, we would look at how many people do we lose in the process of purchasing a product. Ultimately, you have to ask yourself, first of all, from the organizational perspective, where's the money and how that contributes to our overall score? That could be, you know, part of your goals, business goals. But also the customer experience is crucial here, because the better the customer experience, the more likely customers will be to return. And one of the things that is not often mentioned is the employee happiness. How happy are people working on the product, delivering the product, because the more enthusiastic they are about it, and you can also measure that, the more likely they are to create awesome solutions, contribute to the product. And that, you know, ultimately that will lead to better market results. That's just my take on it.
Great, Pavel. So yeah, I thought you were going again to the four key value areas, right, in the work. But what I'm thinking, even extra from what you've said and what evidence-based management guide brings, maybe there's value even in things that do not relate to money. Maybe they could even be valuing societal benefits that the product produces, like, I don't know, cleaning the air or getting a better life for whoever lives on this planet, right? Or improving, I don't know, confidence or the capability of people to learn or get better at what they do. So it's such a wide term that for each, I think, product initiative, needs to be very carefully looked at. And this is why we have an accountability for this, right? If we have a product owner, and product owners are not robots or AIs or something like, I don't know, put in some data and they will just look through that data and generate a formula for getting your, I don't know, key metrics or whatever. They have judgment. They can analyze the market. They can look at other ways that people could use the product and benefit from it, apart from those which would mean just more money, right? So yeah, just more efficient.
An example that comes into my head, I recently had learned from a group of people joining from one of the city councils in Poland where I work. And I was really, you know, happy and enthusiastic to see them, because that means that Scrum is now being introduced into fields and areas that, as you said, are not necessarily connected to increasing the income of the company, right? When we introduce Scrum to handle different things within the city council, it means that the focus is on making the citizens happier. So we're looking at solutions like making the air cleaner. Maybe there are some solutions when it comes to the mobile applications we can introduce to help people rent electric bikes, for example, stuff like that, that will reduce the traffic congestion and things like that. So that this type of things happens everywhere. And we are now seeing how the Scrum application is being used to make our lives more pleasant, basically. So it doesn't necessarily come down to money, as you said.
Awesome. Thank you both for that. All right. So I think we're coming up on our time. There are some questions that we did not get to. So I will share those with Mihai and Pavel, and we will figure out a way to address those. Thank you all so much for coming and bringing your questions. And thank you, Pavel and Mihai, for sharing your insights. This was a great discussion, and I am sure the audience got a lot of value out of it, and as did I. So thank you, everybody. And we hope to see you again on a session soon. And just so that the audience knows, Pavel and Mihai, what's the best way for the audience to stay in touch with you?
I guess you could reach me. The easiest way is to find me on LinkedIn. Feel free to drop me a message on LinkedIn. I would say, you know, you could check out my local company website, but the URL address of it will not tell you anything. So let's leave it out of the picture. So the LinkedIn would be the best option. Just wanted to express my gratitude for all of the questions. Thank you guys for trying out Scrum. And you know, I'm holding my thumbs, keeping my fingers crossed you'll find value in it. And also thank you, Mihai, for joining me for that session. It's been a pleasure to exchange ideas with you on the go.
Pavel, and thanks, Lindsay, for all your support, and to the participants, wonderful participants, sharing so many questions which were absolutely constrained to answer in a short time, but we'll follow up in written for more. And let's connect, right? LinkedIn, I think, is best.
Okay, awesome. All right. So thank you, everybody, for taking the time. And we hope to see you again soon. Scrum on.